Chapter 1. Southern Mexico, December 2012. Danielle Laidlaw scrambled up the side of Mount Pulimundo, sliding on the loose shale and grabbing for purchase with her hands as much as her feet. The frenetic pace of the ascent, combined with the thin mountain air, had her legs aching and her lungs burning. But she could not afford to slow down. 34 years old, attractive and athletic, Danielle was a member of the National Research Institute, a strange hybrid of an organization, often considered a science-based version of the CIA. That they were currently searching for the truth behind an ancient Mayan legend seemed odd, but they had their reasons. The fact that another armed group was trying to stop them told Danielle that those reasons had leaked. She glanced back to one of the men climbing with her. 30 feet downslope, Professor Michael McCarter struggled. "Come on, Professor," she urged. "They're getting closer." Breathing heavily, he looked up at her. Imminent exhaustion seemed to prevent a reply, but he pushed forward with renewed determination. She turned to their guide, a 20-year-old Chiapas Indian named Oko. "How much farther?"
"We must get over the top,"
he told her in heavily accented English.
"It is on the other side."
A few minutes later, they crested the summit. McCarter fell to his hands and knees, and Danielle pulled a pair of binoculars from her pack. They stood on the rim of a volcanic crater. 1,000 feet below lay a mountain lake with a small, cone-shaped island bursting upward at its center. The island's steep sides were thickly wooded, but unable to disguise its volcanic nature. Yellowish fog clung to it, drifting downwind from vents and cracks.
"Is this it?"
Oko nodded.
"Isla Cubierta,"
he said. "Island of the Shroud." Danielle studied it through the binoculars. If Oko was right, this place would be the key to finding what they were searching for. A Mayan site that legends referred to as the Mirror, a reference to Tohil, the Mayan god of fire, who wore an obsidian mirror on his forehead. It was a symbol of power and might, and if Danielle, McCarter, and the NRI were correct, a symbol of far more than that. But so far, the mirror had remained hidden. To find it, they needed help, help that supposedly existed on the island of the Shroud.
"Are you sure?"
she asked.
"The statue is there," he insisted. "I saw it once, when I came with the shaman. He told me that the time was coming, the time when all things would change."
Danielle scanned the terrain. To reach the lake required a hazardous descent, down a steep embankment of loose and crumbling shale on the caldera's inner cone. It would be rough, but much easier physically than the climb they just completed. She tied her hair into a ponytail to let the breeze cool her neck, then settled her eyes on McCarter. He'd managed a sitting position now, though his chest still heaved and fell. His loose linen shirt was open. The t-shirt he wore underneath was drenched in perspiration. Sweat poured down his face, leaving brackish, salty trails on his dark skin. McCarter was in good shape for a 60-year-old university professor, and they'd brought only small packs and limited supplies, having discarded all else in the name of speed. But 3 days of constant hiking and climbing had taken its toll.
"Ready?"
she asked. He looked up, clearly in a state of unreadiness.
"It's all downhill from here," she promised.
"I've been hearing that load of tripe since I turned 40, he said between breaths. "And so far nothing has gotten any easier." He waved her on. "Go, I'll try to catch up."
McCarter and Danielle were an unlikely team, but they'd formed a bond 2 years earlier when Danielle had recruited him for an expedition to the Amazon. Things had started well enough, but in the depths of the jungle everything had gone horribly wrong. By the thinnest of margins, the two of them and a very few others had survived. In the aftermath of that mission, Danielle had quit the NRI and McCarter had gone back to New York to teach. At the time, he had seemed far more likely to sue the organization than to ever work for it again. But in answering to his own curiosity, he'd agreed to do just that. Despite her reasons not to, Danielle had rejoined as well in hopes of protecting him. The way she figured, she owed him that much. He would never have heard of the NRI if she hadn't recruited him. After 8 months in the field and several close calls, including a car bomb and 2 shootings, she wasn't about to leave him now.